Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's the first day of July. 57 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center meteorologist, Cesar Cornejo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. It is a wonderful day so far to start off the month of July. As you said, temperatures around the 50s, not too bad to start off our morning. One thing we can expect to see is another day of showers for today. So we can expect to also see a high of 76, mostly sunny skies. But as that moisture starts to work in for us, we'll end up seeing the possibility of seeing those thunderstorms really happen for us. And they linger into the evening hours, but then start to die down by the overnight hours. We then see that we'll have a low of 56. And as those rain showers start to die out, we'll be welcomed with a much calmer Friday morning once again. We'll see that we have a chance of showers once again for Friday, not as prevalent as today, where we then expect to see also a high of 81 with mostly sunny skies. And then as we go into Friday night, the shower chances linger, but they start to die down during the evening times. Overnight will be much calmer for us, and we'll see a low of 59. Saturday, we expect to see that we have a high of 84, so it starts to become a little bit on the warmer side for us this holiday weekend. And going into Saturday night, mostly clear skies, going with a low of 61. And Independence Day itself, if you're out there enjoying the 4th, just be sure that there is a slight chance of some thunderstorm activity. That's usually towards the afternoon hours as we get that sunshine really helping to build in and create some of that activity for us. We will see a high of 85 degrees, so it will be great to be outside. Just stay weather aware. Sunday night, we can expect to see that thunderstorms will start to die down around the evening time, and then by the time we get towards the overnight hours, starts to linger just more into cloud cover. We'll see a low of 62. And as we go into Monday, we expect to see a little bit of shower activity once again. It's just that kind of summer shower storm that we have for the late afternoons. Mostly sunny skies, 85 will be our high. We'll see a low of 60 for us on Monday night with partly cloudy skies. The shower chances start to slim down by Tuesday. We see sunny skies and a high of 85 for us. And as we continue into Tuesday night, we'll see a low of 62, mostly clear skies, not seeing much in the way of showers or thunderstorms. Wednesday, a much drier day, warmer temperatures as we see a high of 86 degrees as we continue into the work week. Live from the Pinpoint Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Over to you, Leslie.
All right. Thank you, Cesar. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Melina Stevens. Recapping yesterday's meeting, Promontory General Manager Kelly Brown with details on the announcement of the final build-out of the 4,600-acre development of Promontory. And finally, Jenny Dearson with Park City Municipal has details about the 4th of July weekend, including concerts there at Deer Valley. The Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with a recap, I have Councilmember Melina Stevens. Good morning, Melina.
Good morning, Leslie.
So a major topic, of course, with the county council was ways to conserve water. One major option is educating residents. How do we do that? And of course, you heard a representative of Gorgoza Water Company telling the story that after the recent heavy rainstorm, the water used by his customers hit the highest level that he's seen this year.
Yes, and as you were having the local news weather hour, I had that same thought that I wonder if we're going to have increased water usage. Gorgoza indicated that his theory, at least, was that the increased water usage was due to the rainstorm prior, that because we're having some rain, that certain members of the public are under the impression that the drought is over, which is not the case. We have some serious water shortage issues that we need to deal with, and that's something that as a council we're looking at very aggressively. As you stated, one of the major ways that we're looking at doing that is through education, both from really a collaboration from both county partners as well as the water companies themselves, looking at how we can better get information out to HOAs and citizens in general of how to best conserve water and what we can do with that.
So are we just talking mailers or putting in inserts into water bills or?
You know, we didn't get into specifics, Leslie, but I was under the impression that we're really going to have some shared messaging was what we requested was some shared messaging amongst all of the different water companies. We have a plethora of water companies within Summit County that are delivering water to different members of the public, and making sure that everyone's on the same page. This is really an issue. It doesn't necessarily make a difference which water company you're using. We're all getting water from very similar sources, and if we're not conserving equally across the board, we're going to be facing some problems potentially over the next couple of years. We also did look at what we can do as far as ordinances with more xeriscaping as lawns and watering grass for really ornamental purposes is taking a lot of our water.
You also talked about working with the homeowner associations. Of course, some of the HOAs have these CC&Rs that require green lawns or landscaping. Certainly a county ordinance would have precedence, but how does the county respond then to the HOA?
I think, Leslie, that's why a lot of the conversations surrounded education and the outreach, because it would be great to have those HOAs really understand the dire straits that we are in, and being able to self-determine how they're going to deal with those situations amongst their own memberships, how they want to xeriscape, what that would look like, perhaps even changing their CC&Rs. That's something that we are looking at as an ordinance, but the outreach will precede that. We want to get community input as well.
All right, so this will be back to the council, it sounds like.
Yes, absolutely.
Community Development Director Pat Putt noted that, I'm surprised by this, nearly 70 water systems in Summit County. So do we ask them all to enforce watering restrictions?
You know, we're still in the beginning stages of this as far as enforcing. It was pretty clear, at least to me last night, that the easiest enforcement would be through the water companies themselves. How they individually choose to do that will again be up to them specifically, but that's why we're working to convene and get as many stakeholders to the table in shared messaging, so that we can make sure that we're really getting as many citizens on the same page within the county.
Yeah, there were lots of comments that lawns are the big problem, but lawns can be just the little medians in a grocery store parking lot. They can be the single family home with a front and back lawn. And then we've got golf courses. So do we treat all of these differently, or do we treat them all the same?
Leslie, that's something we're still determining as far as what that would look like. But it was stated by Councilmember Clyde, who has pretty extensive knowledge in this area, that the lawn spaces that we have actually take more water than growing a field, because when we cut them, their roots can't get as deep, and so they're really only getting water from the top. So they soak up a lot more water that way. And so for those lawns that are not being used, which I would say would be many of the lawns within, you know, in front yards, sometimes in backyards, that those spaces are taking up some of our water, our culinary water, unnecessarily.
So when do you think we need to move to more restrictions under a landscaping ordinance?
This is something as a council that we directed Pat Putt, our community development director, that we would like to have pushed to the front of his work list. And so I anticipate we'll be seeing it relatively soon.
During public comment, one citizen asked, if you're so concerned about water use, then why do you keep approving more density? And a bit off base here, because he mentioned the Jordan Hill Basin, which of course is in Wasatch County, but still he does have a point.
With the increase in density, and a lot of the density that we're looking at currently are existing entitlements, and so there are different legal regulations surrounding that. Also, with the water companies, they have to ensure that they can service those new developments as part of the process. If it gets to the point where they're not able to service those developments, then we would be having a different conversation.
So do we now have a rush on development applications? Because it kind of sounds like it could be first through the door, you know, going to get approved.
I can't determine that, Leslie. I'm not a developer, and I don't know. I know we have a lot of applications currently for various different projects, both single family homes as well as other projects. So will that increase? It could potentially, but I don't know.
All right. Let's see. A couple of weeks ago, the council created some new positions. We've got a media coordinator in the IT department, a public lands manager. Councilmember Doug Clyde then said that he wanted more staff in code enforcement. So which of those jobs are most important to you?
Well, I think we have a lot of needs right now as a county with the pandemic and with all that was required there. We both had an increased work level for many of our staff and also saw some of the deficiencies that we may need, such as additional IT to assist with now the hybrid meetings that are very labor intensive for staff, as well as with the public lands. We have a lot of public lands that are owned by the county, as well as some issues that need to be worked through with our taking care of our forests and our wildfire prevention plan. And so we have varying needs as far as that goes. With Councilmember Clyde's comment regarding wanting additional code enforcement, I can't disagree with him. Currently, we don't have many. I believe we have one code enforcement officer for the county. And so as we're looking at increasing ordinances, if we don't have the bandwidth from our staff, which in this case would include additional staff, it's going to be more challenging to regulate how that is enforced, how those ordinances are enforced.
Okay, just wanted to ask you, I believe you attended Tuesday's Smart Growth Workshop put on by the Park City Board of Realtors. What was your takeaway there?
You know, it was a great meeting. There was a really great attendance, and I appreciated the focus on smart development. Making sure that as we're looking forward, that we're looking at things like how can we best conserve our resources while still allowing for our workforce to be here and trying to mitigate other things that are within our strategic priorities, such as traffic, making sure that we are providing for that. And so some of the takeaways really aligned with what the county has been working on as far as our neighborhood mixed use zone and master plan development. So, and Kimball Junction master plan, frankly. And so with that, you know, as a county, I think that there's a lot of work to do, and it could be really helpful to have some additional partners with outreach and education regarding that.
Yeah. And when the presenter, Nate Johnson, asked the audience members, what do they want? Do they want more growth, less growth, or stay the same? I mean, at what point did you raise your hand?
You know, with that, I think that there is going to be growth. We're already looking and seeing that, as we stated previously, with the increase in applications over the last year. I think it's critical that as a county that we're forward looking, that we have a plan and that we put bumpers on that. I think it's inevitable that we're going to have an increased growth. There's too many current entitlements.
All right. So did you hear anything that you know, that can be taken back to the council in terms of, you know, look, maybe we should look at this?
A lot of the things that they mentioned, we had already been previously working on. I think that the biggest awareness was that the Board of Realtors is really focusing on this. And again, that the membership there, the individual and collective membership, could be really really positive strategic allies in helping to educate other members of the public. I believe we have 1,400 or so realtors that are part of our Park City Board. And so, I mean, we have a significant membership that can help us with that. And so that was very exciting to me that we could use that base to be able to make sure that we got messages out there so that we could get the public feedback that we really need in order to make proper decisions for the community.
Okay, Melina, anything else you'd like to mention?
Just thank you for all the public that have been participating in our last several meetings. It's critical that we have as much public input as possible. Now with the hybrid meetings, you can tune in on Facebook. And if you want to participate, the Zoom link is in the minutes. So I'd encourage everyone to participate as much as they can. We've got a lot of important topics coming up pretty much every meeting. So, and also thank you to the staff.
Okay, Melina, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
That's Summit County Councilmember Melina Stevens. Well, with the Utah Department of Transportation releasing its final recommendations for the growing traffic problem in Little Cottonwood Canyon last week, Snowbird Resort has come out in favor of an aerial transit solution over expanded bus service. In Park City, Deer Valley Resort has expressed support for a similar solution to the city's own transit dilemma. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more.
With more and more people flocking to Little Cottonwood Canyon for year-round recreation, traffic and commute times have only gotten worse. UDOT officials unveiled two final transit solutions to the ever-increasing congestion last week, an aerial gondola or expanded bus services and a widening of State Route 210 up the canyon. Both options would ultimately cost over $500 million to build, with the gondola requiring more upfront costs and the bus option being more expensive to operate year over year. According to UDOT, after 30 years, the total costs are projected to even out for the two solutions. Snowbird President and Chief Operating Officer Dave Fields told KPCW the resort is firmly in the gondola camp and cited the efficiency and safety of an aerial transit option.
We are very committed to the gondola concept because we've studied this for the better part of a decade, trying to figure out what the best way to get people up reliably, safely, and efficiently in this canyon. The way that you could get over the top of avalanche paths and you wouldn't be reliant on vehicles that can get stuck in the canyon, buses included, during a big snowstorm. We do not believe that turning Little Cottonwood Canyon into the highway equivalent of Provo Canyon with four lanes is the way to solve these problems.
The Wasatch Back is experiencing traffic problems of its own, too. Congestion in and around Park City has worsened as more and more visitors flock to the area each year for summer and winter tourism and recreation. The city currently has future plans for satellite parking lots and dedicated bus lanes in an effort to reduce the number of cars on roads. The idea of aerial transit as a potential solution to traffic problems has also been explored. Last year, Park City Municipal conducted a preliminary feasibility study for a network of gondolas that would connect several key community locations. The study put the costs of the project at roughly $65 million, with $3.5 million required annually for operations and maintenance costs. The Old Town Transit Center, the site of the proposed Arts and Culture District on Kearns Boulevard, and the base areas of Deer Valley and Park City Mountain Resort were identified as potential hubs. Deer Valley has been an advocate of aerial transit in Park City since 2013, and President and CEO Jeremy Levitt reiterated the resort's preference for a citywide gondola at a community leadership forum this March.
We'd love to see the town work with them to put an aerial transit in from downtown into Deer Valley. Parking is obviously key to Deer Valley, and so anything that gets done there will make sure that parking is better than it is today, and that transit is better than it is today.
Deer Valley is currently in the planning stages to redevelop the Snow Park base area, and Levitt said transit will be a central feature of those plans. On the city side, no decisions were made on an aerial transit system last fall, but councilors expressed a need to get more serious about creative options in the future, especially if the Olympics return to Utah in 2030 or 2034. Rusty Gregory is the CEO of Alterra Mountain Company, which owns Deer Valley, and added any transit solution at the resort needs to be done in conjunction with the community.
We need to follow the community's direction in terms of how they see transportation going forward. We need to fit into the community's plan for itself and be part of those, making those plans by collaborating with community members. Clearly, the vehicle with a single driver in it is a problem for all of us.
The Park City Council is not scheduled to revisit aerial transit anytime soon, but UDOT is seeking public input on their two proposals for Little Cottonwood Canyon. Public meetings are scheduled for July 13th and 20th, and the public comment period for the project runs until August 9th. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
The Park City Board of Education held a special works meeting Tuesday to discuss incorporating green building initiatives into the $150 million master plan facilities expansion plan for the six schools. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has an overview of the board's decision to use green building design elements in these expansion projects.
Park City School Board members explored the costs of green building practices while implementing the school facilities expansions for the master plan. The goal is to expand span six Park City schools by 2024. It will bring ninth grade from Treasure Mountain Junior High School into the high school. Ecker Hill will house the eighth grade, becoming a sixth through eighth grade middle school. And each of Park City's elementary schools will expand to accommodate universal pre-K programs. Two elementary schools will also add space for wraparound services, meaning before and after school care. Park City students have asked the board to include sustainability and green building practices in the master planning priorities. Green building elements include sustainable design measures, net zero energy plans, LEED certification, and purchasing renewable energy through the Rocky Mountain Power Grid. The cost to use comprehensive green building measures is estimated at $24 million. However, MoCA Systems representative Paul Ernst, hired to guide the school district in selecting architects and contractors, thinks the price tag is too high and green building practices can be achieved without that level of expense.
You can have a site-specific goal of net zero, means you provide all the power you're using, which is not what we're talking about with these power purchase agreements, but then there's also the net zero where you use more than you create, but you buy into these power purchase agreements and that brings you net to zero. I mean, everything we're talking about doing for the new additions benefits every conversation we're having. It just becomes a matter of, okay, how do you demonstrate the level of benefit you're getting? Or are you getting $24 million worth of benefit from it? Or again, we know there's a premium for designing as high of efficiency of space as you can design. Is that going to be under $24 million? Probably not.
School board member Andrew Kaplan said the district should do all it can to make the building as efficient as possible, but felt a $24 million price tag is high.
There's no carbon emissions other than the use of power to power our schools, right? And our and presumably our car fleet and our buses. If we purchase all clean energy, that's going to be the vast majority of our emissions to get us to net zero, right? And that is just the transportation. As long as we're doing everything we can and we combine that with making a commitment to purchase only clean energy, then we're basically probably 80% of the way there.
Park City Board of Education Vice President Wendy Crossland will work with school operations to write a resolution adding LEED's silver level building guidelines and the district's intent to purchase renewable energy from the Rocky Mountain Power Grid. District officials said they didn't think it prudent to replace all the diesel-powered vehicles at once. Still, as technology becomes more available, they'll replace gas and diesel fuel vehicles with electric.
I do think that at some stage it's going to be important for us to sell this thing, to get any money to sell it, that we somehow, even if it's optics, the LEED thing is a good example, we have to wrap our mind around some sort of resolution or some sort of certification we're aiming for or something other than we are going to be so sustainable and green as we can. That's just not a soundbite.
Crossland and Chief Operations Officer Mike Tanner are working together to define the energy resolution and will present it to the school board in the August 19th public meeting. A link to Tuesday's energy planning agenda is on kpcw.org, and the link to the complete discussion is on pcschools.us. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
The owner and developer of Promontory, Francis Najafi, along with General Manager Kelly Brown, made several announcements yesterday at a media town hall. Kelly Brown joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you took over as general manager last year?
I did, yes. Moved up from Phoenix, Arizona area and have been in Park City now for about 11 months.
Okay, but have been with the development company, you're telling me off air, for couple decades, huh?
Yes, actually, I started with Pivotal Group, the developer of Promontory, when the project was in its very, very infancy. On my second day of work, there was one dirt road on the property, so I've been here the whole time.
Okay, so let's see. The real estate earnings were announced in 2020, $466 million. So far in 2021, $332 million. So while the pandemic was certainly tough for much of the country, Promontory sounds like it came out pretty darn good. Are all of those sales as a result of primary residents just moving out of the cities?
Well, we're seeing an influx of people from all over the country, really, with the pandemic. Obviously, a lot of people that were living in urban cities made a decision to come to wide open spaces and enjoy all that Park City had to offer. So we've seen a lot of people moving in from out of state. And that coupled with people deciding that they can work remotely now and wanting Promontory to be their primary residence, we've seen an unprecedented number of sales in the last year.
Yeah. So Are all of these people coming as primary homeowners, or are they building their second or third or fourth home?
Yes, we still are very much a second home community. So we have somewhere approaching 30% of our residents now are saying that Promontory is their primary residence. Everyone else is still a second or third home.
Okay. And it seems to me, way back in the day, it's part of the development agreement, that there was a limit on the number of homes in Promontory that could be primary. Are you
Our development agreement does provide for certain stipulations on how many homes that we can ultimately build, how many lots that we can sell based upon certain test thresholds. If, for example, the real estate values were below a certain level, we would not be able to plat additional lots, but we're in no danger of missing any of those requirements, and so there is no defined limit of how many people can be primary residents inside Promontory.
Well, last night, owner-developer Francis Najafi said that the earnings are starting to bring him close to breaking even, and said that the project is bringing him a lot of money now after it didn't for a while. And I guess we're all kind of remembering back in 2009 when he bought the property back for pennies on the dollar. That after borrowing some $350 million from the Credit Suisse Group and then going bankrupt. So it's hard to believe that he hasn't made a bunch of money on the property.
I think he's referring to the club itself. So the actual Promontory Club, which is separate from the real estate entity, the developer has to subsidize the operating losses of the club since its inception. We've never had enough members and enough dues and club revenue coming in to break even. This year, for the first time, before factoring in capital replacements, we think we're going to break even, which is fantastic. And the great thing about that is that eventually, when the club is at full build out and turns over to the members, we want to make sure that we have a very sustainable, healthy club that our members are not going to have to fund. So whenever we can get to that point where we're at break even and then have excess reserves for future capital replacements is a great thing. And that's what he was referring to.
Explain that to me. So once it's totally built out, then he steps away and it's run by the members?
Yeah, the way that the club actually works, the way it's defined in our documents, is once you've sold 90% of all of your memberships, you can put it to a vote to the club for them to come in and convert from what we call a deposit club to an equity club. And when you're an equity club, the members basically take over and purchase the club assets. And then they would either hire a management company or have a member-led board that would run the club. So, I mean, we're still several years away from that, but we're obviously trying to get in a very healthy position so that when it does turn over to the members, and that's a typical club structure, that they don't have to fund operating losses.
Okay. But then would be responsible for any capital or ongoing costs, programming costs.
Correct.
Okay. It sounds like there is plenty of money to spend, though, because you will be developing, let's just talk about the new three-par short course that you hope to be playable by 2023, a new golf clubhouse and / learning center, including its own driving range, and an 18-hole putting green.
Correct. Yeah. So Mr. Najafi is obviously very interested in continuing to grow this community, and we are seeing a lot of success on the real estate side, and he is committed to reinvesting a lot of that back into the community for more amenity development. So we have hired Forrest Richardson, who's a renowned golf course designer, to be our designer for our new 18-hole par 3 short course. We've been in some early planning meetings with him and actually have a full day of meetings today. They're on property working on developing that short course with a new beautiful clubhouse. It will have multiple teaching bays with golf simulators, a driving range. The putting course we're really excited about. There's one in St. Andrews that's called the Himalayas. And it's going to be a really great addition to Promontory, especially to our golf population there.
Okay, so par 3 short course, it's 18 holes, just all par 3s.
Correct. And we are still working on the design of that. There's a lot of great ways to play an 18-hole par 3. We're trying to creatively look at it so that you could perhaps play 6 holes, 9 holes, 12 holes, have a variety of combinations. And obviously, we're in the early planning stages, but that's the target.
So where is that going to get built?
We have an area as you enter our equestrian gate on the west side and pass our first neighborhood called the Palisades. It's just above the Palisades. We have a large open space area that we've been saving just for this for this purpose for many years, and so that's where it will go.
Okay, and that's where the 18-hole putting green would go as well?
Correct.
All of that. Okay.
Yep.
And then because of this addition, it sounds like you will be doubling the current number of your memberships?
Not doubling. So per our plan documents, we have limited our full members, our golf members, to 395 per course. And because we already have a Pete Dye and a Jack Nicklaus course, we have 790 allowed golf members, or what we call full members in the community. With the addition of a third course, we'll be adding another 395 full members to the club.
Okay. So you've kind of put that number as what you can allow people, members, to get on and without any reasonable weight.
There's been lots of studies done about what a healthy number is to make sure your course doesn't get overcrowded. And so we're limiting it to 395 to make sure that we're still at a very healthy level for our membership group.
I was going to say, some people are really going to welcome that par 3 course, right?
Yes, for sure. It's really becoming popular these days, people wanting a little shorter golf experience. So
after the new clubhouse there is built, the plan is to tear down the current and replace it with a new building, a 5,000 square foot gym on the bottom. We've got an indoor-outdoor restaurant bar, a great panoramic view on the top floor. So currently you don't have any gym facilities on site?
We actually do. Francis has just decided that with the growth of the community in particular, he wants to make sure we're positioned well for fitness. We actually have multiple fitness facilities on property right across the way from the Pete Dye course in our ranch clubhouse. We have weight rooms, cardio rooms, movement rooms, and we also have a dedicated fitness center at our Jack Nicklaus clubhouse. What he's referring to, though, is where our range is, where our Pete Dye range. We have a small building called our golf house. That was one of our very first buildings that we constructed in the early 2000s. Once we have our new teaching facility at the short course, we will demo that little golf house building. Truly, it's probably one of the best pieces of land on property. The views are outstanding. It just looks out over the ski mountains, the golf courses. And his idea is to build maybe around a 10 to 12,000 square foot facility there that will has about a 5,000 square foot fitness facility on the bottom with just gorgeous panoramic views. And in the upper level, have a restaurant and full-time bar.
All right. And then there are also plans to finish the road to Browns Canyon Road.
Correct.
There'll be a third gate, an entrance and an exit from Browns Canyon.
Yes, we own several hundred acres to the south of where our development currently ends right now, including a right-of-way and actual entitlement to land that connects all the way out to Browns Canyon. The plan has always been to have a third exit to Promontory, and we feel like we're at that point now where it would be great to have Browns Canyon access for all the people that are moving into the southern half of Promontory. It will also help relieve some stress with construction traffic so that the construction that is servicing homes being built closer to that end will have a little shorter route.
Okay, so there's also plans to build a family club, a tennis center, a pool and cafe. So this would be on that, what was known as the South Point property?
Correct. So from the very beginning, Promontory was about 7,200 acres. And in 2016, we made a decision to carve out about 800 acres at the south end and kind of hold it in reserve, potentially for its own development. We were exploring lots of options. We have now decided that it does make sense to just keep that as part of the whole Promontory property as it was originally designed. And with that decision, we definitely want to continue our amenities. Francis always is coming up with new things that he would love to add to this beautiful community. And he has announced a new family clubhouse with a pool, with a whole big tennis center. He's also in plans for an adventure center We're still working on the programming for that, but we've thrown out ideas around rock walls, running gyms, vertical farming, doing all sorts of great things there. So that's still in the ideation stage, but have plans for two great new facilities there at the South End.
Okay, because Promontory a few years ago had withdrawn its application for over 1,000 homes, employee units, it's a couple hundred thousand square feet of commercial density.
Correct.
So that's where we're talking about putting all this family.
Correct. We have 250 units of density already approved over there, and that's what we're just going to do. We had explored an option of perhaps doing more of a primary residential community down there back in 2016, but we've long since abandoned that idea, and we're just sticking with our original density as approved.
Okay. And you were required at one point to build 37 units of affordable housing or employee workforce housing. I think you've built four. So when do the other 33 units come online?
We actually have nine now. So we built two originally in our equestrian facility, and we just completed another seven units. We are within days of getting our certificate of occupancy there. So we should have our first employees that are going to be moving in sometime this summer, which we're really excited about. So the final 28 units will actually be built in a parcel very close to the equestrian gate. We have a piece of land there designated for that. Per our employee housing plan, those are required to be completed by 2026, but the plans will be started before that. We would love to design that in conjunction with a new sales center that we're planning to build at the entrance. So we'll probably be beginning design on that within the next couple of years.
Yeah, so given all of the new amenities are we talking about, well, are these, 37 units enough?
Well, a lot of our employees obviously are living in all of the surrounding areas of Park City. And so the units that we're building right now, the ones we just completed, are studio apartment units. We'll see what the demand is, actually. We just are about to bring those online. So we can always evaluate whether or not we need more. But, of course, we want to make sure that we've met our contractual obligation to provide some additional workforce housing for those that, would love to be on property closer to their jobs.
Yeah, Francis Najafi mentioned that while he'd like to, he can't do everything that that all of the ideas that members have, because they're eventually going to have to pay for it.
Exactly. He's very sensitive to that. Although we're trying to further differentiate this community, we already have 14 signature amenities. We're adding a number of additional ones. We have to be very thoughtful about that, though, because as we talked about earlier on this conversation, when the members take over the club and have the responsibility for the upkeep, the maintenance, we want to make sure that we're in a healthy position and we're not overextending our offering.
Okay. How many homes do you have under construction?
There's 80 homes right now under construction, so there's almost 700 complete, another 80 under construction, and I believe we have about 85 in design review right now, which means owners have submitted their plans to our architectural committee and are in the process of getting those approved. So if you drive through, you will see construction everywhere. So many people fleeing to Park City and Promontory in particular.
Yeah, so besides the 250 units that you have approval for there on the South Point area, how many more lots do you have on the North End?
All told, we have about 700 lots left in the community. So, okay. Including the South Point.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And then in terms of the open space, how much open space would remain then?
We're still consistent with our original development agreement. 60% of Promontory is defined as open space, and that will continue to be the case as we build through the community.
All right. Kelly, anything else you want to mention? I know you probably have a bunch of homeowners in town for 4th of July. Yeah.
We do. We actually have a really robust weekend of activities. We're thrilled that so many of our members are here. We are having our big annual fundraiser this Saturday night to benefit all of the local Park City nonprofits, including Arts and Culture, Social Services, KPCW. So we're thrilled. We have sold out the event, and it looks to be our best fundraising year ever. So we're happy to be a partner here in Park City and be able to give back to our community.
All right. Kelly, I appreciate you coming in. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Joining me now in the studio from Park City Special Events, I've got manager Jenny Dearson. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
So we've got a busy weekend planned ahead?
We do have a busy weekend ahead with the 4th of July celebration throughout the entire weekend. and excited to make sure everyone knows what's going on. Things are just a little bit different this year. Leslie, I did want to start by congratulating the radio station KPCW. Happy early birthday. I believe we have a 41st birthday tomorrow on July 2nd, so congratulations.
And we're
to
having
the
a parade for it.
Yes, we're having a parade for it.
Well, my husband, Dar, it's his birthday too, so he thinks it's for him. So.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Dar.
So what have we got going on? Do you, I don't know, where you take it off?
Well, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of action this weekend. And, you know, the first thing I wanted to start with is that the parade does start tomorrow. It kicks things off. We are removing parking starting at 6 a.m. from Main Street and Park Avenue. Park Avenue parking will be removed from 9th Street all the way down to 15th Street. So just businesses and residents be aware of those impacts. And I think, you know, really to be fair, I think that we have an excellent parade ahead of us. We have 35 floats. All of the floats are local Summit County and Park City residents and businesses. I know what the lineup is, and I think it's going to be a ton of fun. Our community has come a long, long way within the last year. I was looking at some things late last night, even where we were a year ago today. I think I'm really proud of this community and the work we've done together. And we have a lot to celebrate in our community this weekend, and also really celebrate our nation and everyone that served for our country over the entire weekend.
Okay, Grand Marshal, we got how many people as Grand Marshal?
You know, I think the numbers are not yet confirmed, but our Grand Marshal is going to be the frontline workers that have served our community in the last year. So we will confirm those, but you know, the nurses and the doctors and the all those frontline workers and the volunteers that have helped us weather through the last year, we are excited to honor them to really lead the parade, and we'll be happy to see them out there.
Okay. So again, streets closed starting at 6 a.m. People will be able to park in China Bridge?
People will be able to park in China Bridge. If you are parking in China Bridge, parking will be $20. And so we are recommending to everyone to really park at those outside locations. That is Park City Mountain Resort Base, Park City High School, as well as Deer Valley. We appreciate our community partners in helping us really have those locations so that people don't need to drive their cars and can reduce traffic in our community. Park City Transit is working like crazy and to pick people up and get them here. And so I do ask that people be proactive and know how they're going to get here, not only tomorrow, but through the entire weekend. Take those steps. Think about if you can carpool with your friend or ride your bike or give yourself a little extra time to where you need to go.
So tell me about, you've got a bus lane on Deer Valley Drive?
Yeah, so people may remember pre-pandemic, we would set up the bus lane on Deer Valley Drive. That is to expedite transit coming from the high school and from other locations to get them into Old Town, into the Main Street area. And the idea is to, you know, move the traffic to the other lane and let the buses have the right of way and get here quicker.
Yeah. Do we have any bike lanes?
We do not have bike lanes on Deer Valley Drive. I think that's an important part, Leslie. We do ask that bikes do not ride on the road or ride in that bike lane. It is dangerous for transit and for the bikers. So please find those pathway connections on Park Avenue and on the rail trail, et cetera.
Yeah, I just know it gets pretty busy there on Poison Creek between the pedestrians and bikes. So
yes.
Yeah, please be careful, folks. Let's see, we also got the Ecker Hill Park and Ride. We've got the Camas commuter all running. So.
All of those locations are running. So if you're coming from those locations, it's super easy to park there. And then also we have a bike valet on 9th Street. So if you want to ride your bike up to the parade and need somewhere to park it, we will have a crew there that will watch over your bike while you hang out for the festivities tomorrow.
All right. Do you have a drop-off spot for people just dropping maybe people off?
Yeah, so the best place to drop people off is going to be the South Marsac parking lot. That is the main parking lot for City Hall business. So just up here at the top of China Bridge, super easy to pull in there and drop off kids or your family members and then go park or go to work or whatever you need to do while you drop people off for the festivities.
All right. And again, Sweet Alley is closed as of 6 a.m. Is that right?
Yeah. So Sweet Alley is closed. So really parking is closed on Sweet Alley, Main Street, Park Avenue at 6 a.m. We expect the hard closure around 8 a.m. So once the crowds kind of build in, the police department does the hard closure on the road, and no traffic will be on the roads at that point. And that's also when we start loading in the parade, is at 8 a.m.
All right. And that's why people need to use MARSAC to do the drop off or to access Chattanooga
Bridge. Yes, you will not be able to access parking from Sweet Alley. So please use the top of MARSAC. You know, Leslie, I also wanted to remind people to be proactive for communications. We have a great text alert system. So if you just want to text PC events to 888-777, if you haven't done that in the past, you can get the most up-to-date information during events, you know, transportation focused or anything else. We'll be pushing those text alerts out.
Okay. A reminder that there is a fire ban.
Yeah, so I think this is another thing. We really want to protect our community. I think the action that we're asking for this weekend is, you know, even with the little bit of rain we've had, I know sometimes it's tempting to say, like, it's going to be okay, and I'm gonna do this, and no one's going to know. But we really need you to be proactive. There is a fire ban in effect. We do also, we're in a drought situation, and so we really want people to respect that fire ban. You know, we can still have fun without those things, and hopefully those things will come back in another time when we have different situations.
All right. We also have a Deer Valley concert. Is that Saturday night?
So the Deer Valley concert is actually tomorrow night on July 2nd. I believe there are a few tickets left to that event if people are interested. And that starts at 7:30 up at Deer Valley.
Okay. And again, traffic mitigation, just ride the bus if you can out there.
Yeah, we really can't stress enough. I think there's several things to do. You definitely ride the bus. I think Park City Transit has 7-minute frequency through Deer Valley now, and I think that's an incredible thing. So lots of buses going through Deer Valley if you're headed up there. Carpool with your friends. So if you are driving, don't make yourself the single occupant. Like, get lots of people in there, and then you can always bike and walk as well.
Okay. Again, parade starts at 11 a.m. on Main Street. We're going to be playing rugby at City Park, but kind of gone are all of the games and...
Yeah, so we're still dialed back from the full festivities, but the rugby team will be out there with their traditional games. I think that's a 30-year tradition. They will have a beer garden and some food trucks out there for families and friends that want to join them for their fundraiser. And then I did want to mention Saturday morning, if you want to come up to Main Street, we will have at about 10 o'clock in the morning the flyover by Hill Air Force Base, and that's always something really exciting as well.
Okay. And then on the 4th of July, heads up that we've got the Silly Market happening.
Yeah, Silly Market and Car Free Days. This is another instance when Deer Valley has come on as a partner. So in addition to the high school on Sunday, you can also park up at Deer Valley, and we'll be running some extra transit with Silly Market, a direct shuttle from the high school to the South MARSAC lot up at City Hall, so that really trying to expedite transit and alternative transportation. And then just a reminder on Park City buses, masks are required, so be proactive, bring a mask with you so that you have it when you're on there. And then remember, I gotta say it, it's hot out there, and I know it seems maybe not so hot to us, but those pups and their paws on the pavement, it's super hot for them, so try to leave your pups at home if you can, and make sure they're prepared if you do bring them with water or your little dog shoes or whatever. It's very hot for them.
Okay, and want to remind people on Sunday the 4th, we've got at 11 a.m. the Rodney Shores Plaza there on Main Street, another memorial service.
Yeah, so that's the police memorial service. That one is also a longstanding tradition, but we're excited to have that service. Rodney Shore was... passed away when he was serving on the 4th of July, I believe, in the 80s. And so this is a longstanding tradition of our police force, and we're excited to be out there to support them and remember all the work they do in our community. We ask the community to come and join us. We are going to have a bagpiper there. I think it'll be a great service if you want to come out and support the community.
Okay. And then at South City Park, we've got the Noche de Verano. It's the Summer Night Latino concerts happening Monday at 6:30.
Yeah, and I believe that is the last in this series. And so if you haven't made it out there, this is a fantastic local community event. It supports our Latino culture and community. And so if you're looking for some fun on Friday evening, I would recommend that to everyone out there.
All right. And the traditional 4th of July 5K to support the Park City Ski and Snowboard. We're going virtual this year, and people can register in advance at Park City 4th of July 5KFunRun.athlete360.com. And I know, just a heads up, Friends of Library also offering kind of a pop-up book sale Friday and Saturday.
That is correct. Yeah, so there is so much going on. You know, it's a full weekend of celebration. We're excited to be out there with our community and looking forward to seeing everyone.
Okay, lots of people too, again, on the pathway. So those of you riding bikes, please slow down. They're going fast. Anything else, Jenny?
No, thank you. And we look forward to seeing you out there this weekend.
Okay.